Program Allocation Committee. Confirmation of a quorum.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Yes, we have a quorum.
Okay, next item on our agenda is consent calendar.
So moved.
Second.
There's a motion by TCA, second by Dodd, to approve the consent calendar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Next is our regional projects. This is a public hearing. A public hearing and the allocation for the proposed amendment to the Regional Measure 2 program for the I-80 eastbound HOV lane project in Contra Costa County and proposed allocation of RM2 funds, RM2 Resolution 3801. So today the purpose of the hearing is to receive comments on the proposed funding changes to the RME program, which was released for public review on March 11th of this year. Formal adoption of the RM2 program allocation will be before the commission for consideration on April 24th. Note that the public comments period on March 11th will close on April 12th. Written comments must be received by MTC no later than 4 p.m. on April 12th in order to be considered. All comments will be received today. Written comments can be submitted to MTC Public Information Office by fax, email, or in person, or by regular mail. If you have any written comments now, submit those comments to Kimberly Hughes, who is our committee secretary. Now, at this time, I would ask that staff will give an overview of the proposed amendment to Regional 2 program. Kim?
Thank you, Chair Glover. Kenneth Cowell with Programming and Allocations. Item 3A is a proposed amendment to the Regional Measure 2 program. In consultation with project sponsors and adjoining congestion management agencies, staff proposes to redirect $12.8 million in savings from the I-80 eastbound HOV project in Contra Costa County to two new projects in the same corridor, the Regional Express Lanes Network project with $4.8 million and the major interchange modifications project in the vicinity of I-80 and San Pablo Dam Road in Contra Costa County with $8 million. Regional Measure 2 included $50 million for the construction of an HOV lane on I-80 in Contra Costa County. Caltrans completed construction of the HOV lane in 2011 and submitted the final invoice to MTC in September 2012. Caltrans delivered the project for $37.2 million, resulting in a savings of $12.8 million. As directed by state law, staff consulted the project sponsors as well as the neighboring CMAs. These partners identified the two new candidate projects. These projects must be in the same bridge corridor as the I-80 eastbound HOV lane project, which generated the savings. The first new project would study and perform preliminary engineering on the conversion of HOV lanes to express lanes on I-80 in Alameda and Contra Costa counties. The project sponsor is MTC, which delegated that responsibility to the Bay Area Infrastructure Financing Authority. BAFA is expected to accept this responsibility later this month. Staff proposes the Express Lane project receive $4.8 million. The second new project would complete phase one of the major interchange modifications on Interstate 80 near San Pablo Dam Road in Contra Costa County. The project would improve the El Portal interchange and the Riverside Avenue pedestrian overcrossing. The project sponsor is the Contra Costa Transportation Authority, and staff proposes programming $8 million for this project. Finally, if the amendment is approved, staff recommends allocation of $7.4 million in RM2 funds for the right-of-way phase of the San Pablo Dam Road project. CCTA will return at a later date for the remaining funds in the construction phase. Therefore, staff recommends that the committee receive the comments at the public hearing and refer resolutions 3801 revised and 4094 to the commission for approval. Thank you.
Thank you for the report. Now is an opportunity for members of the public to comment. I have one speaker card. If you're interested in speaking, please fill out a speaker card and hand it to Kimberly Hughes, our committee secretary. The speaker card that I have is Jerry Grace.
You know, I love that San Pedro Road so much in San Pedro because I just learned something about that buses. I didn't know. Right off the freeway, the other side, Hilltop Mall, and I walked down there very well. And I learned more and more stuff down that way. And now, Bus 70, Westcat, Greyhound, I was surprised about that one. I didn't know Greyhound would be down there. All those buses, and it's very close by the Real Photo Bank, Bay America, McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's, all that is up there, across by Hilltop Mall, around next to the freeway, and that's side of the freeway, the other side of McDonald's. By the power line, do what you have to do, and I know people drive down there, get a bus, go do what they have to do, get there, do what they would do, get on the bus, get back home, but jump in the car, go back where they at. I love what they're doing. I'm very pleased in what they're trying to do. And I really, really, I would say, good job. And you guys did a really good job of what you're doing on San Pedro Dam Road and next to Hilltop Mall. That is not, the 880 is very close by, and I go past it every day now. And I love where I'm at. And I'm glad I left Alameda County now. Now I'm at West CC County. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. That was the only speaker card that I have. At this time, I will close the public hearing and bring it back to staff. To the commission. Okay, can we get a motion?
So moved.
There's a motion and a second. Move forward. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you. Passes. Next item on our agenda is Regional Measure 2 Capital Program Update. And that's Sharon.
Good morning, Commissioners. Shruti Hari from the Programming and Allocation Section. And I'll be presenting for your information today a progress update on the status of the Regional Measure 2 Capital Program. Now, this report covers a period of 6 months from July through December of 2012 and focuses on what we have identified as the 13 select RM2 projects. And these are either major RM2 projects that need to be monitored closely or are RM2 projects in advanced stages of development and construction. All of these 13 select projects are listed here. And as part of streamlining the RM2 reporting process, these 13 projects are reviewed and reported on a semi-annual basis, with the remaining projects being reviewed on an annual basis at the end of the fiscal year. However, I'd like to note that all of the RM2 projects are monitored continuously to identify issues and aid project delivery. So just to start with a brief recap of the RM2 program, it's been 9 years since we first started allocating RM2 dollars. And since then, as of December 2012, MTC has allocated more than $1.2 billion, or in other words, approximately 80% of this $1.5 billion program has already been allocated. Now, this slide here gives you a comparison of the programmed or the legislated RM2 amount versus the allocated versus the reimbursed RM2 dollar amounts. And as you're aware, the programmed or the legislated amount is $1.5 billion, out of which, as you saw on the previous slide, $1.2 billion have already been allocated. And out of this allocated amount, $0.9 billion has been reimbursed by the project sponsors for the various program projects so far. Now, an analysis of these numbers indicated that most of the $0.3 billion that has not yet been allocated is due to the projects that are shown in the upper box, and these are projects that are experiencing implementation challenges due to a lack of consensus on scope, delays in obtaining environmental approval, or a lack of capital funds to complete the funding picture. Now, I'd like to specifically point out that we had reported this to the Commission in the last reporting period, and we had also mentioned that we would be focusing our efforts on the projects with significant unallocated balances. And we have been doing that, and in this presentation, towards the later part, we bring to you a delivery strategy for delivering some of these projects with significant unallocated amounts. Now, the scenario is a little different for the non-reimbursed amounts. However, most of the $0.3 billion that has not yet been drawn down is due to the following projects in the lower box, and that's because these projects are in construction and they needed the funds to be allocated for the contracts to be awarded, but the reimbursements are beginning to catch up as the construction on the projects progresses along. Now, before getting into the details of the individual program projects, I'd like to remind you that the project statuses are color-coded, and this is similar to the last or the previous presentations where we assess each RM2 project from a budget and schedule perspective and group them into either a dark green, green, yellow, or a red category. Dark green denotes projects that have RM2 projects or RM2 project elements that have already been completed. Green denotes projects that are moving along successfully without any issues. Yellow denotes projects that are at risk and includes projects that have a schedule or a budget challenge associated. And red denotes high risk, of course, and includes projects that have several challenges associated. So having covered that, this here is a list of the dark green projects, so the completed project elements since the last report, last semi-annual report. And so the environmental document for the I-80-680 SR-12 interchange was approved. And this milestone achievement paves the way for other phases like the design, right-of-way, and construction to move ahead and ensures that the I-bond deadlines are met. The 5 out of the 6 utility relocation packages in the Transbay terminal was completed, as well as the installation of the Clipper card fare payment system at the South San Francisco ferry terminal is complete and was placed into service during this reporting period. Moving on to the green or the projects on track that are moving along successfully without any issues. Due to the large number of projects in this category, we have here a list of transit projects that are on track and under construction. And we've also included an estimated completion date along with these projects if these projects continue to move forward at the pace that they are right now. So we have the SMART project where we have the mainline track reconstruction work that is ongoing right now. And the vehicles are being currently fabricated in Illinois as well. Now, the construction on the Oakland Airport Connector project is approximately 75% complete, and this project is very much on track for revenue service in August or September of 2014. On the BART extension to Warm Springs project, the subway segment portion of it is complete, except for the track and systems work. And the line track stations and systems contract is progressing in the design phase. And the construction on the LTSS or the line track station and systems contracts has also begun during this reporting period. On the Transbay terminal project, the last utility relocation project is in progress, as well as the basement train box excavation is progressing according to schedule. Next, we have a list of the highway projects that are on track and under construction. We have the Caldecott Tunnel 4th Bow project. The construction on this project is approximately 72% complete, and it is on track for the tunnel to be open to the public later this year, with final completion of the project in spring of next year. The State Route 4 median widening on EBARD is progressing according to schedule. And we have a few highway projects that are starting construction. The construction contracts on the I-580 westbound HOV lane improvements, as well as the eastbound auxiliary lane, the contracts have already been awarded and the construction is expected to start soon. Also, the design on the I-880 north safety improvements was completed and construction is expected to begin this year. The next few slides that are included in your presentation give you additional detail on some of these projects that are on track and under construction. And we've talked about the SMART project. I'd like to highlight here that SMART recently amended their construction contract to include systems work, which saves a lot of time and reduces contractual risks on this project. The Oakland Airport Connector progressing on schedule, the construction more than 75% complete. The Bart Warm Springs extension, again, the subway portion is complete with the line track stations and systems contract progressing in the final design phase as well as initial construction stages. On the EBART project, the Railroad Avenue station design is going to be proceeding. Only the foundation construction is funded as yet, though. But the construction on the transfer station and the State Route 4 widening is progressing. The vehicles and the rail procurement contracts are currently being advertised with anticipated awards later this year. On this project, the Solano County I-86-80, we talked about the environmental document being approved. However, there are some Buy America provisions that may delay the schedule on this project, but the truck scales relocation project, the construction is ahead of schedule and is expected to be completed by late 2030. Now, coming to the Transbay Terminal project, this project was in the green category or on track in the last reporting period, and this is still on track from a schedule perspective, but from a budget perspective, it is at risk because of the phase one costs having increased in light of the risk and vulnerability analysis, as well as depleting project reserves. The TJPA is exploring revenue opportunities, and MTC will be working closely with them and monitoring this project in order to help support them. The Caldecott Tunnel Fourth Bow project is another example of a project that was in the green category in the last reporting period. Again, the schedule is still on track, but from a budget perspective, it is slightly at risk as the project will need additional reserves for the fire, life, and safety system. Now, there were some questions asked about the AC Transit BRT project. This project has actually progressed quite a bit since the last reporting period. The environmental and local agency project approvals were secured, and the project is moving to the design phase. The project construction funding and cash flow still has some timing issues. Unfortunately, the measure B1, which would have identified additional funding opportunities, did not pass. But MTC and AC Transit are working together to identify additional near-term funding within the construction time frame of the project. Now, the VETA projects are at risk because of significant unallocated amounts under the commute ferry service projects for Berkeley, Albany, and Alameda, Oakland, Harbor Bay projects. The scope is under discussion right now, and MTC staff expects to work with VETA staff to develop a proposal for delivering these projects. On the positive side, the South San Francisco Ferry Terminal construction was complete, and the service was launched last year in June. Now, coming to the US 101 Green Bay project, even though this project showed significant progress in the last reporting period in advancing the PAED phase, this project is fast moving into the high-risk category because of the lack of consensus on project scope, mainly because of that, but also because the current funding does not cover cost for the entire project. The Dumbarton Rail is considered a high-risk project right now because it is underfunded by at least $400 million with no potential funding source in sight. But the interim bus service started in July of last year. Now, this is just to give you a glimpse of what's coming ahead in the next reporting period in terms of the construction contracts to be awarded. And as you've seen, there's been a lot of construction ongoing on some of the RM2 projects, and there's a lot more to come. The 3B for the contract for the State Route 4 widening on the EBART project has been awarded, and the vehicles and rail procurement contracts are expected to be awarded later this year. On the Transbay Terminal, the above-grade structures contract is coming up next, after which the glazing contract is likely to be awarded maybe next year. On the I-80 North safety improvements, like I mentioned, the final design is complete, and the award is likely in fall of this year or winter of next year. Now, this slide gives you a summarized assessment of the RM2 program as a whole in this reporting period. And on the positive side, as you have seen on the previous slides, the majority of the RM2 projects are on track and under construction. The economy and sales tax revenue has also been stabilizing. However, an upturn in commercial construction may lead to cost escalation over the next few years, and this may especially be true due to the construction of the high-speed rail starting maybe later this year or early next year. Now, the downside is that some major RM2 projects are still not fully funded and are experiencing implementation challenges due to a lack of consensus on scope or complications in obtaining environmental approval. And to help address this issue, MTC staff is recommending a delivery strategy to address low project delivery on some of these projects and make the best use of the unallocated RM2 funds. So as part of the delivery strategy, MTC staff is proposing that MTC require the sponsors with unallocated balances to submit a proposal by October 2013, which is this year. Or in other words, MTC would require sponsors with unallocated balances and give them 5 months to submit a proposal to direct unallocated balances on their respective projects towards ready-to-go usable segments by a deadline of March 2014. The next step would be that staff would evaluate these responses on a case-by-case basis and return to the Commission later this year with recommendations. Now, these recommendations may include redirecting funds from some of these projects that don't have a viable strategy and reinvesting into projects that are ready to go. Finally, this slide here gives you a list of all the projects with the unallocated amounts. Now, this information, along with some additional detail on these projects, is included in your packet as Attachment A. And the respective project sponsors for these projects will be notified about this delivery strategy. And I'd like to specifically note here that MTC staff intends to work closely with the project sponsors on these projects to help develop their action plans or delivery strategies as much as required. And with that, I'd like to conclude my presentation on the Regional Measure 2 Capital Program update. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. This is an informational item. So are there any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first, I had a question, and then all of a sudden some other things were said, which kind of really concerned me. But I'll start with the question. In relationship to EBART, I'm okay with the EBART system and all that, so this isn't about Contra Costa County or the system they chose. But have we done an analysis on how much EBART is costing compared to traditional BART since we now have construction and we now have right-of-way and we have a lot of costs that are involved in that? Have we actually looked at it to say this was the right thing to do?
Good morning, Commissioners. Ann Richmond with Programming and Allocation Staff. I don't believe that MTC or BART has returned to that analysis. As I think you're probably aware, it was done during the environmental stage, and the DMU technology that was selected was shown to be significantly less expensive than a traditional BART system. However, I'm not sure that has been revisited.
Well, I just remember back to the Bay Bridge, I think, when somebody told us it would cost $650 million to build or something. I'm just wondering, let me ask the question differently, Steve. Will we go back and look at this?
If you'd like us to, are you interested perhaps in its applicability to another corridor?
There's no underlining, well, that's the next question, of course. but there's really...
It's a good point, because now that we do have, as you say, we have real construction information,
right.
So it'd be good to give you that update. We'll do that.
Okay, and then in relationship to this new revelation about maybe moving monies out of areas where there's not a viable project, I mean, it's pointing directly to Livermore, I would say, you know, B1 had it passed, lost by 751 votes on a two-thirds, we would have been almost $500 million or $500 million closer to that project. We're planning on going out again. So if we tell you that kind of story, will that keep the money there? Or, I mean, I don't understand what it is you're looking for to say, look, we may defund projects to advance other projects, which I don't necessarily disagree with.
Commissioner, I'm just looking at the list in the packet, and I don't see that corridor on that list. I'm not sure that corridor is at risk. I will note, and I think you were...
Well, I can't see that list.
Okay, well, it's in your packet.
Okay, well, it's
on
in
your
front
screen,
of me, so.
So you'll be able to look at it at
okay.
your leisure. But I will note okay. that I think you were instrumental in one of the moves that we made during the life of this program, and that is we had money sitting for Dumbarton Rail. We had a need to get money to the Warm Springs extension to get it moving. We swapped it, and now Warm Springs is on track to be delivered. Now, Dumbarton is still in the same pickle it was in before, which is it really doesn't have a fundable plan. So I think that is a good example of a project where we've still got $35 million sitting in the kitty. It's doing no good at all. And I think our preference would be, if there really is nothing to do with that project in the foreseeable future, to put that money to work somewhere else.
Well, I again, remember I said I don't necessarily disagree with the strategy. And in fact, I think partners are pulling out of the whole Dumbarton Rail project, and I know we're having that discussion over at ACTC. So in that instance, I would agree with you. I guess my question, and maybe I should keep my mouth shut, but why wouldn't the Livermore extension be on this list? Did you only pick certain ones or what? I don't understand why it's not there if there's money allocated towards it.
I think the reason it is a bridge toll funded corridor, but it's not Regional Measure 2 funded. It comes from another source.
1171?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So you're only going to do this with the RM2?
Not necessarily, but that's where we're starting.
So 1171 is to
we're following your good example. I think with RM2, to some extent this is arbitrary, but it's been a decade as of next spring when this ballot measure passed. And I think a decade is a good long time to give people a chance to spend the money. And to the extent they can't, and I think some of these projects will be able to come up with some kind of plan B, some kind of usable segment that we could put the money to work, but some of them won't. And we're hopeful that you'll be willing when that time comes to redirect the funds to some other projects. Now, that sometimes means snuffing out some hope in certain cases, but we think the important thing is to get this money to work, so that's the strategy we're laying out for you, and it would come back to you for an interim step this fall when you would look at these plans, the fallback plans, I'll call them, and then next spring when I think you'd be faced with some decisions about, well, maybe we ought to move the money to something else, and if so, what's that?
Alright, move slowly.
I do agree with the strategy, though. So,
okay, Commissioner Spearing, followed by Mayor Q.
Steve, on the funds that we give to WETA, is that how do we scrutinize that funding, and is it subject to our fix it first policy? I mean, I'd like to have a better understanding of how
well,
that money is allocated.
I don't think so much the fix-it-first policy, but I will, and at the risk of angering one of our former commissioners, who's now a state legislator, Commissioner Mullen, as you know, was a big fan of the South San Francisco Ferry, and it has started service, and it started pretty poorly, frankly. And we do have, as I think you know, a performance requirement for all of the Regional Measure 2 funded transit expansion projects, and you know, if that requirement were due today, that service would be in real trouble. Now the good news is the requirement takes place after a 3-year run-up period, and we're certainly rooting for them, but they've got a steep hill to climb, and you face that with some of the other services you funded with these monies. So we do have a performance framework for that operating program, and we may have to make some decisions there too in a few years.
I just have a concern. You know, you look at the investment we put into San Francisco, up in Vallejo. I mean, we have to be very careful we don't marginalize those services, and as they expand, that's what they're doing. They're marginalizing those services. And so I think it's important that we take a look at that, and I'm not quite sure what our requirements are, but I certainly would like to have some review of that.
Well, I'll just ask Ann or Shruti, when do we bring the operating program forward?
The program for next year will come in May or in June.
Okay, so you'll have a chance to look at the operating program just like you did the capital program today.
I'm Mayor Kidd.
I'm on. Okay, all right. So my light went off. I want to make sure. Okay, I again, maybe it's being new. It's really hard when I looked at the plan we're about to have hearings on, and then I look at these projects to get a sense of where all of our collective money is going and where all the transportation money is going. So, like, I'm going to object to item four, and maybe I shouldn't be because maybe we're getting money other places. So that's just the problem I'm having here, that I'm not quite sure whether we're doing this along a plan or whether certain groups have been in line at certain times so they're just hitting at this time, or whether we're strategically spending our money in a way that we can get the most bang for our buck and or matching funds. I'm particularly concerned that in the East Bay, because B did not pass, and that ABAG's projecting that we're having some of the larger population growth. It doesn't seem that we're getting a commensurate amount of funds. Like in the plan document that we're going to be having hearings on, there's $30 billion of new projected transportation projects, and almost none of them are East Bay. They're pretty evenly divided between South Bay and San Francisco. So maybe I'm not seeing the whole story there, but if we're going to have a lot of the population, we're a transportation center already, I'm not sure if that's an equitable divide. Same thing here. I don't have a basis on which to see whether this is the right divide. The airport connector is almost done, and it is in there as a project that is going to be reimbursed still. But and there's some money for the rapid transit, but there are also transportation issues around the economic development. So, you know, the Port of Oakland, which is I don't see just as an Oakland asset but as a regional asset, has some critical infrastructure, freeway, highway, based on the new construction we're going to be doing on rail, et cetera. It's not even on this list, so I want to know, how do I get into the list, how we look at it, and in terms of these fundings and the flexibility here.
Commissioner, you're right. Sometimes it's hard to piece together the big picture when you're just looking at slivers. I will say for this particular sliver, Regional Measure 2, it's akin to a regional sales tax program. So these projects were earmarked by the legislature and approved by the voters when they raised the bridge tolls. So initially, the commission really didn't have a lot of discretion about what to do. Each project had its amount, and they got their amount. Where we are in the life of this program, though, is after 10 years almost, a number of projects haven't spent their money yet. And I think that is where your discretion will come to bear. And so I would urge you on this one to be patient for the fall, when we will be bringing to you these proposals, the fallback plans from the various sponsors. And I think you'll have to be the judge about whether the fallback plans are credible or not. And once we get through that, we may have some new money to spend here that's freed up by old projects that aren't moving. And I think that's where you'll have the most discretion that you'll be able to bring to bear.
Commissioner Provisvi?
Yes, I think this is a follow-up to your comments about Dumbarton. So if I understand RM2 correctly, it has to have some nexus to a bridge project. And we just approved an alteration early on. My question is this: so, looking at Dumbarton, as you pointed out, Steve, this is in the red category right now. And I'm thinking, okay, so how's the nexus created when we're looking at a project such as, let's say, the hot lanes in Santa Clara County? 101, 237, which actually, to me, have a connection to the Dumbarton Bridge, because both of those will access the Dumbarton at a certain point. How does that get into the redirect phase?
I know Nexus has a particular legal meaning. I think in practice what we've done with Regional Measure 2 is a little bit more like electricity, you know, when you were a kid playing tag, that if you touch him and he touches her. And, you know, so the Nexus in Regional Measure 2 has been fairly broad. Now, at some point you stretch something far enough, you break it. But I think for the most part we have tried to be sensible about it and trying to do where we do redirect funds, using the example of Dumbarton, you know, the money went from a project that literally crossed the bay. So the nexus was clear there to the Warm Springs extension, which does not cross the bay, but it's next door. So to the extent we get to the point where we've got some money to deal with, I think as policymakers, we'll try to give you some broad parameters. We hope you don't stretch them to the point of breaking, but I think you'll be able to stretch them quite a bit.
So if I might, so when this comes up again, does it weigh heavily on the proponents of a project to develop the rationale that can perhaps make that case?
It does, and you know, generally speaking, and as you said, we just had a public hearing today on a redirection. We have tried to work with project sponsors. We've tried not to pry their money out of their active fingers, you know, where they're trying to hold on to it. But in some cases, I think it may be difficult for project sponsors to accept the reality they need to accept, and that's what we're trying to force here by just sort of calling time after a decade has passed and saying we've given everybody a fair shot. Now we really need to talk about whether or not the money could be put to a better use.
Hey, Commissioner Bates.
Thank you very much. So I appreciate the report, and I look forward to seeing what we come up with in the fall. I just wanted to flag the commute ferry service between Berkeley and Albany. It's my understanding that discussions are going on to possibly move that ferry service to Richmond, which I don't necessarily disagree with. I think it might actually be better for everybody if they moved there. You have a built-in group of people who are living close by the ferry. You wouldn't have to commute. There's a number of reasons. I'm just wondering if you're looking at that in a serious way. We spent a lot of money, you know, looking at Berkeley, and it's unfortunate, but I think maybe a better option has now surfaced. So I think I'd certainly like to know more about it as you go forward. Yes?
We can certainly bring you more information on that. I do know that WETA is looking at the Richmond site in addition to the Berkeley site at this point, and I'm not sure within their agency which one is a higher priority, but we'll bring back more information on those two
okay.
locations.
Okay, sort of strange for the mayor of Berkeley suggesting they might want to move the ferry to Richmond. But
you're being a good regionalist, Commissioner. Congratulations.
I want you all to know that. When you do that, I want to trade that for... I want to trade that for a player to be named later. Okay.
You're being less of a good regionalist now.
Sorry, maybe my other question has been answered. I'm sorry. So the voters approved a list of projects that were named. If we have additional funding that comes available, are those funds only available for projects that were named in the act? Or
no, no, they're not. And the good news about Regional Measure 2 is that you do have quite a bit of flexibility in the event that projects either fail or they get substitute funding or for whatever reason they're not able to move ahead.
Well, I see lots of, I mean, I don't, you know, I see lots of potential problems that you'll uncover, obviously, as you come forward in the fall. And so I particularly have my own concerns that I'm trying to do something about the Gilman Interchange, which is a huge mess. And I know that we've used this money in other places for interchanges and stuff. So I don't know how I need to proceed to get this on the consideration for the fall.
Well, Commissioner and the committee as a whole, really, I would encourage you not to start thinking of ways to spend $241 million, because I think one thing a deadline will do is focus a lot of attention by these project sponsors on getting a plan together to spend the money. But once we get closer to a real target, we'll certainly be happy to work with any of you on a particular idea you've got and put it in the hopper and see what turns up.
That's fair, because it's obviously a lot of these projects are going to do just fine, and they got some obstacles. They can overcome those obstacles, but some of them, it seemed like they were a good idea 10 years ago, may not be a good idea today.
Thank you. I have no other comments by commissioners. Again, this
Mr. Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Jake McKenzie, representing Sonoma County and the nine Sonoma County cities. As a member of the SMART Board of Directors, I was pleased to see the very accurate report on the progress that we're making in getting SMART underway. This is a project that is in the plan. This is a project that's moving forward, and certainly will. I just wanted to let you know that we're very interested in further funding if other people are not able to be spending their money. I do realize that my colleague from Marin and the 101 Green Bay project is something that's near and dear to their hearts and that they're working on it, but we're going forward with SMART. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any other commissioners? Okay, again, this was an informational item, so we'll move to the next, which is the electric vehicle promotional campaign. Ursula? Welcome.
Where is it, Gail?
And this, good morning, again, is an informational item.
Yes, it's an information. Good morning, commissioners. I'm Ursula Vogler, MTC staff, and I'm here today to ask for your input on a regional electric vehicle promotional plan, campaign plan, that we developed over the last 6 months. Given the late hour, I'm not going to go into the specifics of the plan. The presentation is in your packets. I have consultants here from Fenton Communications, the firm that helped us develop the plan, as well as my colleague from the EV Strategic Council to answer any questions that you may have. Just as a brief reminder, the campaign is part of our Climate Initiatives Program, a program that was adopted by this committee in December of 2009, and it's aimed at reducing greenhouse gas emissions to help us reach our GHG emission reduction goals here in the Bay Area. We have set aside $925,000 for both the campaign development and the implementation. Also, as a note, the EV Strategic Council approved the plan at its March 21st meeting, and we hope to go out to bid for a consultant or consultant team to help us implement the campaign over the next year. So with that, I hope to get some input and answer any questions you may have.
Any comments or questions? You're doing a fine job, it looks like. Okay. Okay, we will now move to our next item, which is another federal program. This is a Transit Performance Initiative incentive program distribution formula. And Kenneth?
Good morning, Commissioners. Kenneth Follin with MTC staff. Item 4A is the Transit Performance Initiative incentive program formula distribution. And we were here in February with this item, and what happened in February was that the commission approved a couple pieces of it. They approved the split at 85% for the large operators and 15% for the small operators, and that is for the remaining $45 million going forward over 3 years. They also approved the distribution formula for the small operators. What was left, and staff was directed to come back with several options, was the distribution formula for the largest seven operators. So your item in the packet has the two alternatives that staff currently has on the table. The first one is the original February 2013 staff proposal, and that would distribute the funds 25% based on passenger increase on a year-over-year basis, 25% on passenger per hour increase, and 50% based on annual passengers. Alternative number two was part of our discussions with the large operators. It was a proposal put forward by San Francisco MTA, San Francisco Muni staff, and it is 20% based on passenger increase, 10% based on passenger per hour increase, and 70% based on annual passengers. So the comparison of the two scenarios is in your packet as well in Attachment A. And just to quickly give you a flavor for each one of them, Alternative 1 focuses on the TSP goals of increasing ridership and increased productivity, and it balances that with the actual ridership of the agencies. Alternative 2 is more focused on existing ridership, and it also addresses systems that operate near capacity, that it's tougher for them to add passengers without adding new hours of service. So with that, one note before I give it to you for discussion would be we do plan to do an evaluation after each year, and we're putting forward those two alternatives for you all to select one and to refer this resolution to the commission for approval.
Okay. Questions, comments?
Thank you, Scott Wiener from San Francisco. First, I want to really thank staff for working closely with the large operators to come up with alternative two. I really appreciate the work that staff has put in, and I appreciate the other large operators for participating. When this first came up, I had supported taking the 15% for the small operators and approving that and moving that forward, and then asking that we take some more time with the remaining 85% for the large operators. And the reason is that when you compare the transition year to what was being presented, which is still alternative one, that resulted in an almost 50% decrease for Muni. There was no other operator that was even remotely in that universe or even three universes over in terms of the absolutely dramatic reduction that Muni would experience. And so, and again, nearly 50% for the operator that carries approximately half of the transit trips in the region. The alternative two is still not great for Muni. It's still a 30% reduction from year one, but we are at Muni, and I concur, willing to accept that. We understand that there needs to be factoring in of potential increases for other operators, and we certainly want to help other operators increase their ridership in various parts of the region. So, colleagues, I do support alternative two, and I hope we can move this forward with a recommendation to the commission of alternative two.
Mayor Q.
Okay. So I seem to be getting a lot of fights with my friends in San Francisco lately, but the reality is that. You know, I wasn't here when you made the transition to the smaller operators, and I think that's probably fair. But the alternative San Francisco supports obviously would shift more money to SF Muni and would reduce money for AC Transit and going forward significantly more, and Caltrain. And even Samtrans and a couple of the others. So Oakland would support, and I think some of the other East Bay and other providers would support maintaining the current formula, which the staff, which you, I think, discussed before I really became a part of the commission.
Okay. Commissioner Tissier?
Yes. Obviously, you know, if you look at it directly on what we gain, obviously San Mateo County would prefer alternative one. But I guess I have a bigger concern. I mean, I don't necessarily see this as a huge incentive program. That's what it's supposed to be. In some respects, like for Samtrans, we may not have as many people, passengers per hour, but we travel much greater distances with our passengers. So, you know, it sort of takes the regionalism out of this in some ways, because we're sort of getting penalized when our average ride is maybe 15 to 20 miles, where, and I realize Muni has a lot more travel, but a lot of them are much shorter trips. So, you know, it makes it a lot harder for us to get incentivized, so to speak. You know, and that sort of leads to the fact that not all trips are equal. Obviously, there's not a huge difference between one and two, and I don't necessarily need to fall on the sword over it, but I do think this is more of a disincentive, and it sort of penalizes sort of the regional transit and the longer distance transit. And I would rather see us, you know, rewarding us for, you know, getting more people off the highways than the short distance trips within smaller street areas. So, I'm sort of perplexed at the word the incentive funding, because it doesn't seem to be an incentive for certainly for Samtrans. So if I were to pick one, I would pick alternative one based on SamTrans dollars. But again, I still think we need to look at things regionally.
Okay, any other? Commissioner Bates.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, maybe you could explain to me the transition year, what it precisely, and how that differs for ongoing alternative one and two.
The transition year was established before we started the development of the formula, and it's based 100% on ridership. So the formula for years going forward, we're trying to incorporate in the incentive formula.
So they're currently receiving what we call the transition year, is that correct?
For the first year, it's $60 million total in this program. The first $15 million is based on the transition year, and then the remaining $45 million would be based on this formula.
Okay. And so just to kind of lay it out, the advantage of alternative one is that it recognizes, more heavily recognizes improvements within the system, is that versus alternate two, which basically recognizes the current load that people are carrying?
The difference between the two is that alternative one weighs a couple kind of productivity measures equally with annual passengers. So passenger increased year over year, as well as passenger per hour increase year over year, is weighted equally with annual passengers. Number two is slightly more focused on annual passengers.
Okay. Well, it's hard. I mean, obviously, San Francisco has a good point. But also, if we're trying to encourage people to create, opportunities to carry more passengers, I think you have to come down on alternative one.
Yeah, I would add just one thing, is that we do plan to do an evaluation after each year. And I think that maybe to Commissioner Tissier's point, is that there are other measures like miles, passenger miles and things of that nature that we could incorporate or consider in future years as well.
May I ask a question?
I have another speaker, and then you can. Joe?
I'd like to follow up on Commissioner Tissier's point as well. Looking at the intent of this program, which was to incentivize increased production. I certainly appreciate San Francisco's issue relative to that heavy hit at this initial stage. And I guess I'd like to know more about year to year how things are going to change, because I look at the for VTA in the South Bay, it's insignificant, one or the other. But when I look at Caltrain, that's a fairly significant reduction in what they're going to receive, and I would like to hear more about the additional factors that might be used to evolve this program. Perhaps at the front end, this makes a lot of sense, but I think I'm leaning towards one, the first option, because of the fact that it seems to be more driven towards what the intent of the program was when it was devised, and but at the same time trying to acknowledge San Francisco's major reduction that they're going to get if we went with one versus two. So that's my interest, more specificity about those things that might change as we move forward, and the assumption that this is not going to be a lock, this would be a one-year program, and then we would see it evolve from there.
Commissioner, I guess I could say welcome to the world of transit formulas. And it is the case that depending upon the factor you pick, you will advantage or disadvantage a given operator. I mean, Caltrain's a very good example. It does not carry a large number of passengers, but it carries them a long distance. And the ones that it carries generally would be driving if they weren't on the train. That's not true of Muni in many respects, but the trips they both carry are valuable. So what we tried to do, no matter whether you choose alternative one or two, is put a couple of different factors at play. And I think any kind of formula that tries to acknowledge the diversity of our region needs to do that. The way I would look at it, I think annual passengers is a way of sort of rewarding agencies and municipalities for the work they've already done. And, you know, Muni doesn't carry half the passengers in the region by accident. You know, they put a lot of their local money into it. They have developed a pattern of development that supports it, and so on and so forth. And the other factors really are looking at an incentive to improve on that in the future. And I think it's up to you to decide what the right balance is between sort of a reward and an incentive. We're trying to, I think, acknowledge that you need to reward and acknowledge what folks have done to get to where they are, but you also want to encourage them to do better.
Okay. Commissioner Hallstatt, followed by...
Go ahead.
Microphone.
The transition year, once more, which year specifically is that?
Current.
The transition year was based on fiscal year 2010-11, but I would note that for the most part, that's the most consistent of the three metrics. In relative terms, that's not going to change too much.
So either one or two is in the future, and the transition is current.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Commissioner Campos, followed by Weiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would simply just note that while I understand the importance of incentivizing the increase in ridership, I think it's a very important goal, that I don't think that the intent of the program was to penalize the success that has been had already. And I think it's about striking a balance. So I would certainly ask my colleagues to consider alternative two, because I do think that it is significant the hit that San Francisco would take under alternative one. And I do recognize the importance of focusing on the incentive to increase ridership, but I just don't think that it's, from a public policy standpoint, that it helps the region when you hit the largest operator that way. So I would encourage you to at least think about alternative two.
Commissioner Weiner.
Thank you, colleagues, and thank you for all the feedback. I just want to make a few points just in putting this in perspective. First of all, you know, last month, as Representative San Francisco supported moving forward the 15% for the small operators. It's not about just money grabs. And, you know, frankly, there were arguments for and against putting aside 15% for the smallest operators. I supported that. That doesn't benefit Muni. Supported it because we're acting like a region. In addition, we have not taken the position that we need to go back to the transition year so that we get the 45% that we got in the transition year. We're not arguing for that. What we are saying is that the formula that was chosen, and that formula is not some self-revealed, you know, self-evident biblical text handed down from on high. It was a formula that was chosen by staff and came forward, and that formula, which took into account both current ridership and improvements in the future, only one operator and one operator only got completely, frankly, blown up by that formula, and that was Muni. And all we asked for was a reconsideration of another option. It's not an option that gets us back up. We still have a dramatically more significant reduction for Muni than for any other operator of 30%. When you look at how other operators compare to the transition year, under alternative two, AC Transit still gets a 20% increase under alternative two. And in addition, I will note that BART fares better under alternative two than under alternative one as well. So, colleagues, I would just say that, that this isn't just about different operators grabbing money. I think there is nothing self-evidently better about one than two. They both take into account current ridership and improvements in the future. And I guess the question is it really fair that one operator and one operator only takes that kind of dramatic hit? I don't think it is.
Commissioner Mayor Q.
Hello, how are you? Okay. Again, this is the problem, I think, at looking at programs one by one. You know, this one says incentive, so I thought Commissioner Tischer's position is a lot more sophisticated than mine. I'm looking at more overall growth and potential. If you accept a formula based on basically 70% annual passengers, you're basically accepting the status quo. And I agree, San Francisco has put a lot in its infrastructure, but you're also getting the largest amount, and historically have gotten the largest amount of capital investment. So I've got to talk about Oakland and our infrastructure and the East Bay as the population shifts east. Are we going to put capital investment also in the East Bay, where the population is projected to have the largest growth, and where our systems haven't had as consistent. And that's the beauty of San Francisco. You're a city and a county. You merge a lot of functions together. You've been able to make these great investments in terms of smart growth and your density. But a lot of the other cities along the East Bay corridor and our transportation are doing the same things, and we haven't had the past capital investment from MTC or the other organizations. And so that's why I think it's really fair, and we should spend some time just looking at all of the investments that we're going to be making in the Bay Area and how we're planning for the next decade. But I think this program talks about incentives. I think Commissioner Tischer is absolutely right. If you do it based just on the status quo, at 70% of all the formulas based on who's got the passengers, then you're not necessarily incentivizing the growth of the network. And I think that was what was behind originally helping the smaller feeder systems, because you know we've got this core system with BART, and some of us have large transit systems. But you've also got the continuing travel in from the suburbs and outlying regions, and we're trying to get them off out of cars and into mass transit. We're trying to reward development along the current transit line. So that's why I think that we should stick with alternative one.
Commissioner Tissier?
You know, the hardest part with this is we're measuring apples against oranges in some ways, because if you take our situation with Caltrain and Samtrans, Caltrain, for instance, has increased its passenger ridership by between 12 and 15%. So, and we've done that because clearly, you know, there's more people heading different directions. We're sort of the flyover county, if you will. But at the same time, you know, it's helped us make improvements to Caltrain. And so, you know, in this case, if we go with alternative two, we're sort of disincentivized for all the work we've done over the year to increase the Caltrain ridership and put a lot more of our fare box revenue into it. So I guess the question I have, is this something that we have to decide today? Or the reason I ask that question is because I still would like to see us use some additional scenarios for this incentive program for consideration and the miles traveled. You know, I do think passenger increase is important, because if you're going to incentivize people for the ridership they have versus increasing their ridership, it really shouldn't be an incentive program. But, you know, we're using only a couple things in here and not really looking at the big picture. And I believe me, I understand San Francisco's issue. That's a lot of money to lose. But if you look at Caltrain, that's a lot of money to lose there. And with Samtrans, we don't have exactly the same. Our ridership is down, and we're relooking at our plan to rework it so that we increase ridership on the main lines, and then we're sort of disincentivized again. So I'm having a hard time supporting alternative two, because it leaves Muni as status quo and disincentivizes us, but I clearly understand the issue, because Muni carries a gazillion people, and you don't want them, I mean, you don't want them to lose that much money. So I sort of feel like this is, we're comparing apples to oranges, and it isn't really a fair comparison for the large operators, basically. So I just wonder if it should be looked at in a couple different ways to make sure that Muni doesn't lose such a large amount of money, but that also the other large agencies get some more money so they don't lose out in trying to make improvements to their systems. That, as you say, we don't carry the same numbers, but we continue to increase, and we take a lot of cars off the road every single day, which would be nightmarish in our county. So, you know, I don't want to put myself in a position to vote against San Francisco, but at the same time, if we have to vote today, I will likely do that.
If I could ask a question of staff, is does this have to be voted on today, or can we go to the commission with no recommendation? Yeah. That would give staff an opportunity to maybe consider some of the comments that's been made today in terms of the proposals.
Mr. Chairman, I think you certainly can forward it without a recommendation. I'm frankly not sure the staff can help you a whole lot more here. We've been back and forth with the operators on this, and Commissioner Weiner is right. As long as the transition year is based entirely on current ridership, any alternative will disadvantage Muni. Now, I think he's raising the question, you know, we're willing to play ball here, but don't make us play too much ball. And I think that's a fair point to raise. But I also want to maybe challenge you, if I could. This is a very small amount of our total federal capital program that we do for transit. And that program in the past has been entirely blind to performance characteristics like ridership. Basically, you brought us a bus, we replaced the bus on the same schedule. You brought us a train, same deal. And at least my hope would be that in the future, you could base more of your decisions on a performance basis. And, you know, I think we're having sort of a rocky start here because if we can't pull it off for a relatively small amount of money, I'm not sure we're going to be able to get that much farther. Now, it's certainly true that we could add some sort of distance-based metric here. I will tell you that who that will benefit the most is BART. So any monkeying you want to do with the formula will bring some people up and bring some people down. And anything we do that's not entirely based on ridership will bring Muni down. So if you'd like to take it forward to the commission, we could certainly perhaps give you some other ideas in terms of different formula approaches. But I think ultimately you're going to have to reach some consensus among yourselves so that we can move forward.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Weiner.
Thank you, and I'm fine moving both items with no recommendation and see what we can do between now and then and have this for the full commission. But I just want to note a couple of things. First of all, I can't count the number of times since I've been on the commission where the formula that actually comes through is nighttime population. And so San Francisco gets 12% of the total. It's not based on ridership. It's not based on daytime population. It's nighttime population, which is the absolute worst metric for San Francisco. And we do that over and over again. So it's not like we're constantly doing things based on ridership and it's, you know, somehow unfair. It's almost the opposite. But I, you know, just as a, to put this in sort of real world perspective for the impacts, we do have the highest ridership. We're not guaranteed to keep that ridership. If you look at the TPI money that we got for the current year, the lion's share of that is going to rehabilitate light rail vehicles. The other day I take the subway to work on Market Street every day. It took me 20 minutes to squeeze onto a train. It's because we don't have enough vehicles. We're short like 10 or 20 vehicles to actually meet the needs of the system. That is a negative on ridership. So in terms of incentivizing, actually having enough LRVs, having enough vehicles that are being rehabilitated, not to mention the fact that we're going to be adding significant population, and we don't even, I think, have a plan to meet the transit needs. This isn't just about some sort of static situation where we have X number of riders and we're just going to meet that and we're not going to be able to increase it. We're not meeting our current needs, and we have to expand the number of riders that we service every day. So I just don't want there to be this dynamic where San Francisco is sort of in this static situation. We're sliding when we need to actually be growing.
Thank you. Commissioner Halstead.
Very briefly, I'd just like to remind you that Muni does serve the region very dramatically, that our ridership is not just San Franciscans. It really is a feeder system for many of the other systems as well. And secondly, as a regular Muni rider, I'd like to say that lately I have felt like my feet were too big. There is not enough room for a size 9.5 foot on the bus because it is so crowded that I can't get my feet down the aisle. We really need more buses, and I feel that every day.
Okay. Okay, Commissioner, I'm going to recommend that we take this before the full commission, and if that's all, I'll make that a motion and see where it goes.
I'll second.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. Any?
Yeah, maybe under discussion. Yeah, I think that, unfortunately, this discussion we're having right now is going to take place at the full committee. So we might as well, we might just move it to the full committee, because it's going to happen there again. Second thing is, I think it's important for us to, for Steve, if it's possible, maybe to give us a broader overall picture of the funding, not just this incentive, but the total funding package, because the reality is that this, as you indicated, it's only a small portion of the overall, so we need to know the overall. And the other thing is, we all have problems. Every system has problems. San Francisco has it, AC has it, Samtrans has it, everybody has it. So it's not like, we have to figure out a way that we, Solomon-like way, to be able to allocate these funds. And hopefully when we get to the full board, we'll have a chance to look at a broader picture and hopefully get a good solution.
Okay, all those in favor of the motion before us, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. This will be before the full board at its next meeting.
Mr. Chair, there is one public speaker on that item.
Oh, I apologize, from AC Transit, Robert.
Good morning. Robert Del Rosario, Director of Service Development for AC Transit. A number of the points I'm going to make have already been stated by the commissioners, but I'll state them on AC Transit's behalf anyways. We are in favor of option one for the distribution formula. It provides needed funding for AC Transit, VTA, and Caltrain, many of which provide regional services and benefit throughout the Bay Area, some of that into San Francisco, such as AC Transit's Transbay services. Option one is in line with the goals of the TPI, which is distribute funds based on performance improvements, whereas option two rewards agencies based upon the size of ridership base but not on improved performance, which should be a goal for the whole region. Under option one, 50% of the distribution formula would be based on improved performance and productivity and ridership growth. And I should also remind the commissioners that under MTC's Transit Sustainability Project, there are a number of recommendations to improve transit performance with potential capital projects such as AC Transit's Line 51 Performance Improvement Project and their Inner East Bay Comprehensive Operations Analysis. And option one would be in line with the Transit Sustainability Project and rewarding agencies based on performance. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we'll move to our next item, which is the Draft 2013 Transportation Improvement Program and Air Quality Conformity Analysis. Sherry?
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. I'm Ross McEwen from the Programming and Allocation Section. Sri Srinivasan could not make it today, so I'm making the presentation on her behalf. On March 29th, the Draft 2013 Transportation Improvement Program, or TIP, and accompanying Air Quality Conformity Analysis were released for review and comment. The public is invited to provide written comments as well as oral comments at the various Plan Bay Area public meetings throughout the Bay Area, with the public comment period ending on May 3rd. MTC and other metropolitan planning organizations in California have historically followed a Caltrans statewide schedule to update the TIP every 2 years. Based on the two-year update schedule, the draft 2013 TIP was initially released for public review and comment in June 2012, with a public hearing previously held in July 2012. During the initial release, it was noted that there was a timing mismatch between the 2013 TIP update and adoption of Plan Bay Area. In September 2012, MTC postponed the final adoption of the new TIP to align it better with the development and adoption of Plan Bay Area, and that is what brings us here today. As a reminder, the Transportation Improvement Program, or TIP, is a list of Bay Area surface transportation projects that are to receive federal funding or are subject to a federally required action or are considered regionally significant for air quality conformity purposes. All projects included in the TIP must be consistent with Plan Bay Area, and the TIP must be analyzed to determine whether the program complies or conforms with the Federal Air Quality Plan, known as the State Implementation Plan, or SIP. Federal regulations also require an opportunity for public review and comment prior to TIP approval. The draft 2013 TIP includes roughly 880 transportation projects and a total of approximately $17 billion in committed federal, state, regional, and local funding over the six-year TIP period through federal fiscal year 2018. To further assist in the public assessment of the 2013 TIP, and specifically to address the equity implications of the proposed TIP investments, MTC staff prepared an investment analysis with a focus on minority and low-income residents using the same methodology as the equity analysis for the draft Plan Bay Area. This analysis is included in your packet. Following the close of comment period on May 3rd, staff will prepare a summary of comments received and present them to this committee for consideration prior to forwarding to the Commission for approval. That concludes my presentation. This is an informational item, so no action is necessary at this time.
Are there any comments from commissioners? Commissioner Spearing.
You know, I want to commend staff on this guide. I mean, this is just a very good document. You know, for the people that don't understand our transportation lingo and all the acronyms, and it really ties all these pieces. It talks about how the projects are funded, you know, how the projects are included in the TIP, the public participation, but it's very well done, and it's user-friendly, and it's easy to read. And, you know, I've shown it to several people that know nothing about transportation, and it is a meaningful document. So I just want to commend staff. This is a very good document.
Thank you, and thank you for acknowledging staff. I think that we don't do that enough when we get these good works. Any other comments? Okay, thank you for the presentation. Next item is public comments, and I have no speaker cards, so at this time we are adjourned.